Yeah. Oh, okay. All right. I make sure. Thanks. Good. Yeah, it was there. The first one was there, and this is also there. All right. Thank you. So we, if you could settle down. And if you could please close that door also. So once again, reminder, we are at the certification program track, and we are at the second session for after lunch, post-lunch, second session. And the presentation is Standing with the Integrity, Integrity You Check Using Random Sampling. And this is provided by the talk is provided from ADSEC, Reynold Newells. I am sure I'm killing it. Sorry about that. So you can say this in correct pronunciation. He's an IT security consultant with ADSEC Information Security. Welcome, Reynold.
Okay, thank you. So, shameless plug. As you mentioned, my name is Reynold Nunez, and I work for ADSEC Information Security. We're an independent, privately owned company that focuses providing laboratory and consulting services for information security. We provide services for both, for FIPS 140-2, Common Criteria, and PCI. Our offices are located in Austin, Beijing, Munich, and Stockholm. And yes, Texas is a country. So, as I said in the title, the actual title is Integrity Testing by Way of Sampling. It was called Integrity Testing by Way of Random Sampling, but we randomly decided to remove it. So the things that I'm going to talk about today are to explain the FIPS 140 requirements on integrity testing as they currently stand. Afterwards, I'm going to express the problem that many vendors face when meeting the requirements. Next, I'm going to give some examples of sampling methods that are performed by other industries. And lastly, what I want to do is to deliver a proposal introduced by the Integrity Testing by Sampling Working Group. So how do we define integrity testing? And I'm just going to basically reiterate what the standard currently says. It says that cryptographic modules shall perform power-up tests, and this includes cryptographic algorithm tests and software and firmware integrity tests. The software firmware integrity tests using an error detection code or approved authentication technique shall be applied to all validated software and firmware components. And this is in assertion 922. Now there's another assertion that requires that the cryptographic mechanism using approved integrity technique shall be applied to all cryptographic software and firmware components within the cryptographic module. So then we have another IG that defines a component, a module specifically called a firmware module. So in this IG, it says that the firmware module is defined as programs and data components of a cryptographic module that are stored in hardware within a cryptographic boundary and cannot be dynamically written or modified during execution. It also says that if the operational environment is limited operational environment or non-modifiable also, then the operating system requirements in section 4.6.1 do not apply. So what this means is that for firmware modules, you can use an error detection code to satisfy the integrity test. Now, even with all of that, vendors still face a couple of problems. On the one hand, you have some modules that are running on a limited operating environment, which include large binary images, sometimes ranging in the gigabytes. Now, these large binaries typically only include a small portion of crypto-related content. Then you also have other devices, such as smart cards, which have limited resources. And in that case, the integrity testing, the firmware, significantly slows down the power process, rendering the FIPS validated module sometimes inefficient, and in other cases, even useless. So we want to take a look at what other industries do. And what do? They sample. In manufacturing industries, sampling is used in quality control. For example, the number of defects in a sample of electrical components, one can infer what the overall reliability of the manufacturing process. Not every single light bulb is tested, as Dr. Rozinski likes to say. In medical research, sampling is used to identify health risks. For example, From the difference in heart disease rates between a sample of smokers and a sample of non-smokers, one can infer the overall effect of smoking on the risk of developing heart disease. And one of the most common examples that we can relate to is that of pollsters. In opinion polls, not everyone within the population is interviewed, but rather a sample is used to draw a conclusion as a whole. For example, how many of you like ICMC? Raise your hands. I would take that as everybody loves it, so that's a great sample. So what we have here is what the Integrity Testing by Sampling Working Group has come up with. Shortly after the presentation by NIST's own Dr. Alan Roginski last year, a working group was formed to take on the task of defining a set of rules that could be used in order to satisfy both the vendor world and the certification world. Excuse me. And this group involved vendors, CST labs, and the participation of CMVP validators. It was chaired by Dr. Alan Roginski and participated by members such as Andre Yusuf from F5s and labs such as us, myself being the note taker, ringleader, kind of guy that picked to come up here and speak to you guys. So anyways, all of us kind of came together and decided, well, what is it that we can do in order to meet these requirements, to bring everybody together and to satisfy both worlds? What we came up with was integrity testing by sampling. And so what I want to do is give you an outline of what this means. I'll start by giving you the assumptions that we all came across as being specific to any kind of case. Go through the steps of what it takes to initialize a module. Then I'll describe two different methods, one of them being a deterministic sampling and the other being random sampling. And lastly, what I want to do is describe to you what the error state and recovery process is going to be. So let's go into the assumptions a bit. A firmware integrity test is a health test only, at least it's supposed to be. It is not designed nor intended to guard against targeted attacks. The cryptographic module should have other means of defense commensurate with the module security level to protect against deliberate attacks. Now, the second assumption that we're making here is that the firmware image that is subject to integrity test can be divided into two portions, parts, portions of parts is what I want to describe here. One of them is called we'll call it a crypto-related, and the second, non-crypto-related, pretty simple. While it is not possible to exclude Section B, the non-crypto related from the validation requirements, this partition may be subjected to a much less rigorous firmware integrity test than that of the crypto related. And the last assumption that I want to make here is the integrity test shall be performed on the entire firmware image during the installation phase. So that guarantees that at least once it has been completely tested before we go through the other processes of testing the integrity test. So when we initialize the module, both the crypto and non-crypto parts are to be tested differently. The entire crypto part must be tested every time the integrity test is executed. And as for the non-crypto portion, a different subset or slice of files is selected each time the integrity test is performed. If the integrity test on the crypto part and that of the slice that is selected from the non-crypto portion are successful, then it is believed that the module will satisfy the firmware integrity test requirement of the FIPS 140-2. So first, what the vendor is supposed to do is to permanently divide the non-crypto files into portions of equal size. And then next, the vendor will choose to test a slice of the non-crypto files either by random selection or by deterministically selecting and testing each slice sequentially each time the integrity test is performed. So it's just a little image to kind of give you a more visual indication of what the pieces we're talking of. Here's an example of a firmware image where we're describing that the non-crypto related portion takes up most of the image and the smaller portion of it is the crypto related. So what we're trying to suggest here is that we take these non-crypto related files and we just break them down into slices. So in the most simplistic way, the module may perform an integrity test on the files in a deterministic way. So what we're saying here is that when an integrity test is performed the first time, it's selected on the first set. We have an index counter, which is set to 1, And every time an integrity test or a power-up test and power-up is performed, the index is incremented by one. After each one of those slices is tested, the counter will be reset to one and start the process all over again. By selecting the module, the segment is random, the module may use a random number generator to generate integers representing the slice of the files in the non-crypto related portion. So when the firmware integrity test is performed, the random number generator is called to select the setter range in the entire non-crypto related portion, and then perform an integrity test using an error detection code of at least 16 bits in length. Now, I want to make a note here that the random number generator that is used does not have to be approved for cryptographic applications. So you don't have to use a DRBG for doing this. However, it shall generate integers in such a fashion that each slice has an equal opportunity to be chosen from the whole. So what if I fail? I'm not sure how many people can read this, so I'll go ahead and read it for you. This is a cartoon from Dilbert. And in the first one, he says, "This is Dogbert Research Company. Have you ever been killed by a poorly designed product? No?" And in the middle cartoon, it says, "My tainted research shows that your products haven't killed anyone. For an extra $50,000, I can call a second person." And the boss says, "No, I don't want to jinx it." So the question is, are we trying to circumvent the whole integrity test? No, we want to test it all. And the idea is that we are doing it in the initial initialization of the module. Now, in the event that an integrity test failure occurs, what we suggested is that the recovery from the error state should require that the module performs the integrity check on the entire firmware, just as it did when you first installed it. If the integrity check on the entire firmware is successful the second time around, then the module may return by to implementing the integrity check either using the random or deterministic method that we described. So a few final points of where we stand with this working group. We've completed our work and submitted our draft to the CNBP, and it is now under review. I don't really know the details at this point as for where it lies. For more questions, you may be able to ask Dr. Rozhinsky. But once the CNBP goes through the process of reviewing it, it will be sent out to the labs for further review and analysis and comments. So what is your interaction as a vendor? What we want is for you to voice your suggestions to the labs as to the benefit that this IG would bring to you, so that it will actually come to fruition. And there's another point that I want to describe here is how do we define what crypto and non-crypto related files are? And for that, as it stands, what we're suggesting is that you work with the labs to identify those portions. But more work will come in this area once the IG is published. This is my last shameless plug. I ask that you consider participating in the Cryptographic Modules Users Forum. If you want to know how to register, I've even provided a link for you. Thank you.
So that's awesome. You even stayed on time. Wow. So any questions, please ask.
I have a 12 computers. I had this question on how do you establish what we mean by success of computing the integrity check? Do you pre-compute some integrity, some checksum such as a hash which is stored on the file system, and each time you reboot the machine or each time you install the module, you recompute the checksum and compare it against what was stored in the file system, and then you say it's successful?
Yes. Yes, that is the idea.
Okay. Then the next question comes in terms of how you partition the non-crypto portion into a number of slices. What is the basis? How do you partition it? Do you enlist certain files that are part of the non-crypto modules and you say that these are the files that will form, each of these will be a slice, or do you have a group of folders? What is the basis on how this is done?
I don't have a full answer to that one.
Okay.
Although that, this is a suggestion that we could bring up with the next next talk we have, but I don't know how we can work it out.
Okay, mm-hmm. Thank you.
As a follow-on to that, the non-crypto code, I mean, all code is not created equal. So simply saying I have so many, you know, megabytes, gigabytes, and I just say, well, I have to divide this up into 12 portions. Portion 1 could be of no significance, and portion 10 could be of great significance to the vulnerability of the product.
Right. So
how are you determining what's statistically significant?
So what we're looking at here specifically on crypto portions, anything that has that touches keys, not so much worried about file system management. So that's where I said that we would like the vendors and labs to work together to identify that. I think whenever this does come into fruition, into a full IG, there will be some rationale that has to be provided by the labs as to why the vendor chose to break it up the way it did.
So why is the non-crypto including the boundary in the first place?
Well, I think that would be a question for CMBP. So
as it currently exists today, vendors are required to perform an integrity test before they can move on. If there are errors, they must react to that error. Based on what you have here, you have a different suggestion for running an integrity test, and if there's an error, they have to take some action. Although it's a different way of running the test, it seems like the process is still the same, so I guess I'm not 100% clear on what problem that this is actually solving.
The speed or the having to test the entire image. In some cases, the vendors have a full 10 gigabyte image that they have to test, and it's more on the ability to have a performance boost for vendors.
Ronan, just a quick question. So, yeah, are you recommending that finally? So I understand that validating an integrity of non-encrypting file system would be definitely important, but are you considering as well recommending for the an encrypted file system, for instance?
No, I would not consider that to be part of the same.
Okay.
Because it's still crypto related, in my opinion.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah. It's more. Yeah. Okay.
The ISO spec originally had a 32-bit EDC requirement. I know the smart card consortium said, no, we can do 16 because it's too heavy a load. But since you're only taking a small slice now of the non-crypto code that you're actually inspecting, why maintain the 16-bit EDC now? Why not go to a stronger error correction code, this bit length?
So the way we're interpreting this is as the standard currently stands, and the way it recommends is a 16-bit. I don't wish to suggest a change in the IG to make it any different than that, because that's how it's currently defined. But I could say that maybe in the future that could be a suggestion. Do we have any more questions? Mm-hmm. Sure. Oh, the slides are also posted online, so you can also find all the slides there. That's why I added it here. So.
Thank you, Ronald. My comment was that I would assume that you would change the sampling every so often, not use the same sample or slice.
Correct. Yeah. That's right. The idea. It's either in one case you're increasing the index, so you're testing the next portion, and another case you're doing a random selection, in which case you're always testing something different. Although
something different, yeah.
So. Could possibly test the same.
That's why you don't want to do the random to be not truly random. Okay. Thank you, Ronald, once again. Appreciate that. So, do we have the next speaker?
Thank you very much.
Are you the next speaker? Okay. So there are two versions of it. So yeah, if you could come this way. Hey, okay. If you could just come here and look at this. Okay, there are two sets of them. Which one is yours, do you know?
I don't know.
Yeah, do you know which, if there are any changes, can you just scribble, can you just roll through it and see which one
is? So show me something.
This is the one, this is seems to be the latest, I don't know. Did you keep them twice? Okay, how do you pronounce that?
Raikun.
Raikun.
I can introduce myself if you like.
Well, a little bit, I would say. Does this look familiar?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I'll
go with this. You can look through.
Why is this on? Are they all on Google?
I'm sorry?
Are they all on? This is on Google. This is on the...
It's on the hard drive here.
This isn't on the hard drive.
Yeah.
It took a long time to...
Yeah. But I was wondering why they have two versions of it.
Well, let's try the other one. What's wrong with the other one?
That's what I said.
Okay, let's go with the one. Let's go with the other one.
Okay, just close this one then.
Yeah.
And minimize this. That should be good.
So.
Yeah. Make it in the view mode. And
so how do we?
You go.
How do I get it started?
Go in the view mode. Yes.
Which? How do I do that?
You're there, I think. No, you have to be in the view. Yeah.
Present.
Mm-hmm. All right. So you are going up to 240, 235.
That only gives me
235.
So I only get 10 minutes.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, we'll go a little, maybe a little later. So because
I need more than 10 minutes.
Well, you'll go 15 minutes. Let's put it this way. If out of the 20 minutes.
Okay, sorry. Anyway. I'm going to have.